Jones and Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling, married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say.
About family,
women, philosophy,
politics,
history,
people,
money,
pop culture,
kids,
fighting,
business,
life.
Join the conversation. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7 worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
This hour, the Dean of Obscene, Charlie Sheen, and the Death of Discipline.
What do you do when someone asks, what do you do?
And Rock Robot Sheds Royal Blood.
This is Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike. Jones, I have a disclosure to make. This may or may not catch you off guard.
Okay, you've made some pretty big disclosures over the last few weeks, so this makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, well, this is a big one. Oh, this is a big one. Billy. Billy Baru. Come on, Billy. Danny, are you my friend Danny? No, I just wanted you to know that I am HIV negative, and I hope that you won't judge me for that.
I don't judge you for that, but I always kind of assume that.
You can't assume anything in this world. You know what they say about assuming.
I do, but I'm not really involved with you, so I don't really feel that it could make an ass out of me.
Yeah, you didn't feel like, I had to tell you. There's nothing, we're not doing anything all that risky together where I have to disclose that to you by law or morally.
Right. Yes. But I did not anticipate that.
But that's the crazy world we live in now, where people go on the Today Show and announce in a major media event that they're HIV positive. And there are new like terms entering the vernacular, the lexicon in Americant, in America. Your status. It's called your status. Now, Charlie Sheen shouldn't be, you know, made to be a pariah because he's HIV positive in any way. He should be made to be a pariah because he was HIV positive for years and years, maybe 4 years, maybe 7 years. Who the hell knows how many years during that whole winning thing, during the Tiger Blood.
Well, that's
era,
when it started, right?
Well, that's, I'm assuming he that he out. Was like, you know, probably the cocktail was making him crazy and he went off the deep end. But during that time, he was HIV positive. And so he probably infected untold scores of people. Untold scores of people.
It is shocking. And when I saw that interview on the Today Show, my favorite part of it, if anyone can have a favorite part of an attaining HIV
there you go, magic.
Virus
nice.
Conference, if anyone can have a favorite part of those meetings, I loved when he goes, when Matt Lauer challenges him, I'm like, but Charlie, you knew you were HIV positive and you were still continuing with the same practices that made you HIV positive. And his response, I know. That was my bad.
He said that?
He says, that was my bad. And then he thumps himself like he was on a playground
and you see that.
Your buddy.
Yeah.
And you like try to force the pass in even though he's double covered. And then the ball gets picked off and they go down. And you look at all your friends doing that. You thump the chest like, my bad. That was me.
Yeah.
That was my guy.
Yeah.
I did that. He does that with Matt Lauer.
Jesus Christ.
I was HIV positive and I continued to bang whores. That's my bad.
Yeah.
I own that.
Jesus H. Christ.
It's unbelievable.
The H does not stand for HIV in Jesus H. Christ. So, yeah, I was outraged. I guess I must have had some sort of an out of body experience while I was watching that. Because I did not see that, the chest thumping part. I did not hear my bad. I think I might have vomited.
Yeah, no, it's dude, you got to go back and see it. It's good.
I mean, I loved him when he was doing the winning crazy, doing interviews in his mansion with two chicks. I thought, like, this guy is just, he's letting it all hang out.
Well, it was,
he should be ashamed of these things, but he ain't. There's something about that that I dig.
Well, to me, it was the ultimate in FU money. Like, he was living that life that everyone would like to, just that crazy. Like, what if you could just be crazy? Like, what if you could just be crazy and walk out of the house only wearing a wife beater and that's it? Like, what crazy stuff would
no
you
pants.
Do?
No pants. No, nothing. Just your genitalia flying in the wind.
Exactly. And Charlie Sheen was like just doing that. Whatever came to his mind, he, you know, we had Tiger Blood, like whatever he wanted.
Saying the
to
craziest
say.
Stuff. When he did the tour, the stage show tour, the winning tour.
Right, yes.
And like, I loved that because it's like you're not particularly talented. You don't have an act. You're literally just walking out onto a stage with a microphone in front of an arena full of people and just going off the cuff. I love that.
Yeah, and just making up terms like, oh, people, they say I'm bipolar. I'm by winning.
Right, and everybody loved it. We all cheered. He was like a hero to like probably half of America at the time.
It's a very thin line between stupid and clever.
That's right. And now we find out, oh, while you were doing that, probably giving a death sentence to untold scores of people who don't have the incredible means that you have.
Yeah, he will ultimately, if magic is the guideline here, he'll be able to afford his cocktails and he'll be fine.
Well, right, he'll be fine. The people that he gave HIV to, probably not so fine. Meanwhile, he wasn't doing this for altruistic reasons. He wasn't being noble. He wasn't trying to protect people. He was doing it to protect his butt. He was doing it because he's about to face lawsuits. He was doing it because he was about to be exposed anyway by some, like, porn star or something. So I juxtapose that experience with another experience. I went to a funeral this week for a guy that we knew in high school as the dean of discipline. And there's no greater distinction that you can make from the dean of discipline to the very visage of a lack of discipline, Charlie Sheen.
Yeah.
More on that next, Jones and Mike.
When it comes to finding a holistic doctor near you, where can you turn for help? When you need a cancer doctor who will advocate for a non-surgical, non-chemical course of treatment, where can you find her? When you need a chiropractor or acupuncturist, when you need help with ailments that many doctors and even hospitals just plain turn away, like Lyme disease, who can help you with natural solutions and strategies for diabetes? When you need help to find an integrative, functional, complementary, alternative approach, option, and practitioner, the Health Freedom Network is there. Since 2009, the Health Freedom Network has been a leading resource for natural medicine and health information and research. Now we're also your best resource to give you access to the top docs in a number of specialties, from cancer to stroke, and in modalities from chiropractic to dentistry. The Health Freedom Network's directory at healthfreedomnetwork.com. Better information for better choices. Find your new health practitioner at www.healthfreedomnetwork.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at jonesandmike.com.
312-957-7210.
Hashtag Jones and Mike.
Jones, this week I went to Butthead's funeral.
Yeah, it's funny. I thought about going.
Yeah, I was kind of pissed. I didn't read the article like in the, I don't know, the Star Herald or whatever the Southside paper was that I read about his arrangements. I didn't find out about the wake until the day of the funeral. So I just went, all right, I have a flexible schedule. I have some time this morning. I'm going to Butthead's funeral. Butthead was the name that I knew a man named Al Brazen as when I was like 8 or 6 even. My brother went to Marist, and he would regale me with tales of Al Brazen, who was known to the student body as Butthead for some reason. I don't know. God rest his soul. And Butthead was the dean of discipline at Marist High School from like its inception, 1963, till he retired in like 1999.
Right.
And this guy this guy was like an imposing figure, like Frankenstein-esque.
Yeah, and it was more his lack of movement, just sitting on a chair or is hobbling around. It almost seemed he was almost as though he was some kind of character from The Shining. Like just that, he's slow. He's not that mobile, but he's in perpetual motion. Eventually, you'll lie down to take a nap, but he will still charge through the forest until he finds you.
He was very Michael Myers-ish,
yeah,
like that.
Where, absolutely.
Like in the movie where you're running full speed and Michael Myers is just ambling, and you figure Jamie Lee Curtis is going to get like a few football fields away from this guy at some point, right? No. Michael Myers was so constant, consistent, even in his slow gait.
Disciplined, if you will.
That eventually he'd grab her ankle and hack away.
Right.
And that's how Al Brazen was. This guy, he didn't say much, but when he spoke, you listened. And he only said like three things. He said like button your top button and fix your tie. He would correct your grammar. So if you said, can I go to my locker? He'd be like, I don't know, can you? And then you go, may I? And then he would make you say it in a full sentence. Very similar to what I do with my small children. I don't let them just say, thank you. I say, you got to speak in a sentence, man. You got to look them in the eye. You have to engage. Speak in a sentence. That's how he treated 14 through 18-year-olds. And then, you know, if you were disheveled, you know, shirt untucked, whatever. It seems on the surface that he had very little to watch over. But on the other hand, just even addressing those very few things, the handful of things that he addressed, it did instill what his business title technically was. It instilled discipline into us. During his funeral mass, the priest who gave the eulogy, I'm always kind of bummed when like a family member doesn't do the eulogy. On the other hand, I don't really ever want to give a eulogy.
Yeah.
So the priest gave it, and he mentioned that Al was fond of saying that discipline, the word discipline, derives from the word disciple, and, you know, drawing obviously the Catholic, the Christian intonation there, that to be disciplined means to follow a set of rules, and that will make you a better person, and ultimately you will be happier if you're disciplined, even in small ways, like just tucking your shirt and not looking like a gangbanger.
It's a pretty long walk from untucked dress shirt to gangbanger.
Well, you know, there were dudes in our school that were gangbangers, and they would try to, you know, they would gang it up, right? So, but not around Brazen. So he would amble around like with a broken leg, man, and he would round the corner, and if his gaze fell on you and you weren't put together, you weren't happy. You weren't happy that you weren't being disciplined at that moment. And so I expected there to be a huge outpouring from the school and whatnot. There was not that many people at his funeral mass. I was actually kind of disappointed. I may have been one of the only students there. Now, for all I know, back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, back when they allowed it, maybe he punched so many kids in the head when they allowed corporal punishment that maybe he's hated. I don't know. And I didn't particularly love him, but I did spend hundreds of hours,
right? You spent
in
a lot
detention
of time
with him. He was the moderator of detention in room 209 at Marist, and unfortunately,
I didn't even remember the room.
Well, that was like one of my classes. They put room 209 on my little list of rooms that I had to report to. That's how undisciplined I was. Now, am I the pinnacle of discipline as an adult? I don't know. It's not for me to say, but I do value that word, and I appreciate the discipline that character and the other dean of discipline there, Brother Rich, and my dad did instill upon me. Did I like them all the time or even any of the time? No, probably not. But I appreciate that they took enough time to give me some semblance of discipline. And when I look back of the events of this week, going to the funeral for a man who didn't say much, didn't necessarily do much, lived kind of basically in obscurity, but was indelibly linked with the word discipline. And then I look at Charlie Sheen on TV, the very vision of lack of discipline, no discipline, who feels no shame for his lack of discipline. His father, who clearly would never be confused for someone being Father of the Year, not only is not ashamed of his son, but has the balls to be like, when I saw my son on the Today Show, I saw the vision of bravery. How brave of him to come forward.
Yeah, like, that dude. I do not get. I can't even imagine. Look, he's in a tough spot. What do you say? But if I'm him, you say nothing.
Yeah, no comment works, Martin. Like, or like, you know what? In Hollywood, you have kids, but they stay with the mom. And I was out, doing hashish in Thailand, filming Apocalypse Now. I was a total absentee father, and this is what happens. But no, not only does he not say that, he's in full CYA mode, or maybe he's just that, impaired as a person, that he doesn't even recognize what he has foisted upon humanity in the form of his worthless scumbag son. So this isn't to rail on Charlie Sheen or whatever, but I was like, oh my God, dude. This guy's laid out at his funeral. Hardly anyone's here. And he impacted me enough to drive, 40 miles each way in the middle of the day to at least show up, right?
Yeah, I do think it's interesting. It's interesting your response to this, that you went. Like, when I saw that he passed away, there was a part of me that thought, like, oh, would I go to some kind of memorial or something like that? Even though I never went to detention. I'm like, he was such a big part of that school.
You're a pansy.
Yeah. Oh, no, I was disciplined.
You had, like, one detention. You went once, right?
I went once or twice, but it was, like, getting to school late. Like, I never had any kind of, like, talking back to a teacher or anything like that.
You never said the F word in religion class,
no.
Like me, and got 11 detentions. Jugs, justice under God.
Yes. Yeah. There was very little justice under God needed for me. My friends, not so much. Me,
yeah.
I was fine. But, it's funny, though, because when he died, though, I was thinking about that idea, him being the dean of discipline and, the effect that he had on people. And I think of him and then, the other guy who was in charge of discipline at Marist, Brother Rich, who's still there. I don't think he's a dean of discipline anymore. But it's interesting. I always found it interesting that Mr. Brazen was always so robotic. And always, like, perhaps he was a good man, but, like, I mean, to me, and I'm not being critical of what he did, but he was as educational as a stoplight. It's either green, there's no yellow. He was as educational as a stoplight without a yellow light. It was either green or red, and that was it. Then I think about the other disciplinarian at the school, Brother Rich, who, if he honored his vows of celibacy, did not father any children. And I always have to say, like, I do think it's important if you're talking about discipline. It's one thing to lay down the rule, but I also think it's important to connect as well.
Like, to tell people why the rule is in place.
Or just even reward good behavior. Mr. Brazen conducted himself in a manner where if you were doing it right, you didn't need to hear it. And if you're doing it wrong, then you heard about it. Now, there's kind of an old school, people who love, Bobby Knight basketball kind of appeal to that. But at the same time, I think about Brother Rich, who could be just as harsh, just as direct and severe about drawing a line in the sand. But he was also the same kind of guy who would sit there and be like, Mr. Noonan brings up a great point about the Visigoths invading Rome.
Yeah,
And you kind of got that feeling of like, okay, cool. This complete hard ass is acknowledging that I studied or I prepared or that I have a considered opinion about European history, which he's teaching. And or like, remember, this is always a great example. Greatest football play of all time, which I talk about often.
Yeah, too
Marist
much.
Marist High
too.
School,
yeah.
Bob Lipner.
Uh-huh.
Well, when he made that play, Brother Rich, for the day, wheeled a television into his class, made everybody watch that play about how you play to the end of the game. You never quit. You keep going.
Yeah.
And like, so to me, I look at that, I look at those two styles and I think as important as the discipline is, the reward, like that had to make Bob Lipner feel like a god for that day, that everybody saw that he...
Oh, it hasn't ended.
It hasn't ended, but he appears to be a productive citizen.
No, no, no. What I mean is I bet it has shaped his life.
Right. Yes. Something like that.
It's shaped your life, for Christ's sakes.
It has.
You were like, you had a jacket with no letters on it on the sideline. People were still calling you a Benny, even though you were a sophomore at the time.
That's not true. no, but it was like, that is... like that would last, that would be more lasting. I think the connection, it's one thing to talk about discipline and you look at, and I think actually the bigger thing than even if you look at, say, a Charlie Sheen, you know, you look at Charlie Sheen and his father more than Martin being around and telling him what not to do. If he had connected with Charlie and was like, hey, you are really good there in that play, or you really did this well, I think that kind of almost instills more. I do think as important as the discipline is, like the connecting and the reward. And I think it's interesting that a guy who was not a father, didn't have his own family, was able to make those connections that we still talk about like 25 years later. And I'm not saying that to put Brazen down. I'm saying Mr. Brazen took it to a certain level. But I think what Brother Rich did was go to that next level, and that was something that someone who has gone down the Charlie Sheen path in life, I think that is even more needed, the reward and the connection, than the discipline.
Yeah.
Even with that example, let's take you for example.
Oh, God.
You were talking about when you were coaching your kid in soccer this year.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the kids don't listen. Sometimes the discipline isn't great. Sometimes you wonder if it's your coaching style or if it's the parents and NAEPs. What could it be? But you were noting you did have one child that could really be a challenge, and you stayed on him.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last game of the year, what did he say to you? Coach Mike, can I be goalie? Because you showed me how to be goalie, and I want to show that I can be goalie and I can play the position.
Yeah, and like, I said no, and I told him to sit down on the bench.
And then you put your cigarette out in his head.
I did.
And slapped him across the face.
How do you like this, Connor?
Right. No, but it wasn't, he wasn't, his feedback to you wasn't necessarily thank you for the discipline, but it was certainly thank you for the connection.
Yeah, and so my kind of counter to that, which is it also dovetails, is there's beauty in both approaches. Brazen wasn't the outgoing dude to do what Brother Rich did, but both of their approaches were not only needed but valuable, and this is why. Sometimes there's four rules. Just follow the four rules. And it's up to you to eventually determine why those four rules were or are in place. Brazen had four rules. Don't look like a boogie. Look presentable. And when you're engaging with a human being, engage properly and speak with proper grammar.
Yes.
And people will take you, you know, what did I derive out of it? People will take you seriously. People won't push you around. You can't just, speak in guttural, half sentences and whatnot. You got to say things a proper way. And he didn't tell me the way a Brother Rich would, but eventually I got there.
And all this, and to think the name of your first voiceover company was velvetthroat.com.
That's right. That's right. And I can't believe I let that domain go. It's probably worth 10 grand now.
Right. Yeah, no kidding.
Velvet Throat. No. So, Brazen, I appreciate his, hey, get there on your own. It's not for you to understand the why necessarily. You just got to do these things. And I'm not going to sit here and paint the whole picture for you. You know, maybe if somebody would have told Charlie Sheen, hey, man, going around and having sex with like 1,600 women and maybe dudes, probably not a good idea. I'm not even going to tell you the why. You'll get there on your own, Charlie. Oh, and if you do catch, HIV, if you attain the HIV, as Magic Johnson once said so eloquently, stop having sex with people. It's just a basic tenet of discipline. No one should have had to have told him that. It's not that difficult, man. It's kind of like the Bible, man. Like the book of Leviticus. It's all these rules, right? But it doesn't tell you the why these rules are in place. But for the most part, thousands of years later, you look back at those rules and it's like, yeah, a lot of those rules make perfect sense. But it didn't have to tell me the why. Later on, Jesus H doesn't stand for HIV. Christ told me the why. Thank you very much, Jesus. But the Leviticus stuff was right on. Right on. You shouldn't eat pork, Jones. Stuff's bad for you. Pigs eat slop. They eat garbage.
See, I've never spent a lot of time with Leviticus. So I'd have to really do that to really know that rule in, rule out. I could go, that one's right. that one's right.
Will we ever see a day where there's discipline in America or in the world ever again? Because I don't know. Everywhere I look, there is zero discipline. And not only that, but we have such an inverted morality now that, like, if you're a completely undisciplined disease vector, the Today Show will give you a full hour to kind of boister your case as to why you were such a schmuck.
Yeah, that is incredible to me that you're not hearing that response. Really, I think, I don't know if it's just people are caught up in the fact that he's actually making the announcement, though, at the same time, of anyone who is going to make that announcement out in Hollywood, it's not that shocking. It's Charlie Sheen. Though I do have to say, when I heard that he got it and they were talking about sexual practices, that he would use condoms made of lambskin.
Ow!
That was the first part of the problem. Lambskin.
Yeah, the book of Leviticus preaches against lamb's wool condoms.
And apparently they should lambskin condoms as well. It was so funny, though, because when I heard that, I went back to, like, even when I barely understood what a prophylactic was, I had always heard, like, and don't do the lambskin. And I had just always known that. Always had known that.
But nobody told you why. They just said, don't do it. And you went, all right. They did the L brazen to you.
The why. No, but I always thought, what do they eat? What does a lambskin condom even look like? Because I just get this vision of like a tube sock or something so obviously not meant to be in the line of work that it is in. Because it's just overmatched. Uh-huh. And yet this guy, like, how could I know that at like 12? And Charlie Sheen in his like 40s and 50s is busting out the lambskin. Totally off topic in terms of discipline.
Well, no, but at the same time, just shows how the depths of his deception. He wanted to trick people into thinking that he was protecting them. It's by putting on this dog and pony show of a lamb's wool prophylactic. And it took a porn star to see, no, actually, I know from being on the set that those things are like a sieve. They're gonna stop the baby, but that's it.
That's my bad.
Yeah, that's my bad. That dude should be in a cell next to Jared Fogel, man. Not on the Today Show, because here's the thing. The Today Show, by doing that and letting his doctor come on for a half hour to talk about how Charlie's been under his care and his sexual partners have been under his care, the two of them that he copped to. It's like, no. You guys, what we're doing is what we always do in this country and in the world now. It seems like we're trying to understand. We're trying to be tolerant. And it's like, no, NBC. No, you don't let that guy on. And you talk about it, and you talk about it in the terms that it deserves. He should not only be a pariah, but he should be in a jail cell.
It's interesting that you would see from years ago, like Matt Lauer could so easily go to guns on Tom Cruise, or they could have this tense conversation. But if you get a chance to see the interview, I think Lauer also gets sucked in, because right away, Charlie Sheen is like, first of all, I want to say thank you. Thank you for having me on. Thank you to your producers. And he started naming the producers, Janet and Samantha and David. They've been wonderful to me.
I had sex with all of them.
Yes, I did. I used lamb's wool condom, but I covered it with a tube sock and my daughter's soccer sock. So she said she'd be fine. But I just want to thank you guys. You guys have been so understanding and so respectful. So thank you. And then Matt Lauer would be like, well, thank you very much. We really appreciate that, Charlie. Now, and I would also like to say thank you to your film crew. They came out to my, and he kept cutting them off. He said he started the conversation with thank yous three or four times before he got into it. So I think it was almost one of those things where Lauer was just like, oh, I can't go. I'm exhausted now. I can't go to guns on this guy. He was just so polite.
Yeah, so gracious. And why? Why was he thanking? Because this was an important step for him to get out in front of the story. It was a publicity stunt. Get out in front of the story before I start getting sued by like 100 people.
Yeah, try to craft your own perception.
Yeah, and now it turns out that he's now marketable more, or possibly viewed as more marketable in Hollywood. Before, he was seen as a maverick who could wreck your project. Now, ostensibly, there will be some level of sympathy where he can now make more money. He's going to need to, because his lack of discipline is going to enrich people that honestly need the dough. just to live. Just to live. We need more Al Brazens in the world. Simple, to the point. I dig what you're saying about telling you the why.
A little love.
We do need more of that.
Just
we do
no
need more of that.
Skin.
All right, Rock Robot's got a tune you should hear up next. It's Jones and Mike.
Another Pacific Rim Omega customer speaks.
My name is Tony G. I was very impressed by taking the product and the purity of the pharmaceutical grade of the omega-3 fish oil. I really felt very, very good by taking the product. As far as my mood, I noticed the collagen in my face and some of the lines that have disappeared, my nails, my hair. I highly recommend this product. Pacific Rim, I really, really enjoy the product, and I look forward to purchasing more products in the future.
Find out what Tony and thousands of other people know. Pacific Rim Omegas are the best thing you can do for your health. And get 59% off your order right now when you take advantage of this special exclusive offer. Go to radio.mydailyomega.com right now and save 59% off your order of Pacific Rim Omegas. Or call 877-324-4227. That's radio.mydailyomega.com. Omega.com. Radio.mydailyomega.com.
Hello, this is the Jones and Mike Rock Robot. No, I'm not here to take your pathetic human life or put you in a people zoo yet. Instead, for now, I have been programmed to bring you the best music that's out there and help you rock your face off. Where else are you going to hear new music? XRT? Forget about it. They're playing Pink Floyd right now, I bet. This week, let's sample the track Little Monster from the band, Royal Blood. Suck it, you little pansy boy Lynn Kramer. Seriously, just two guys, from Brighton, UK, Royal Blood, and their tune Little Monster from their self-titled debut album. If I had a face, it would have melted off when I sampled that album. Keep on rocking in the free world, my little pet humans. Rock Robot, out, bitches.
It's Jones and Mike. Jones, at cocktail parties, when people say, so, Brian, is that your name, Brian? So, Brian, what do you do? What do you say?
I tell them.
Okay, answer.
I tell them.
So,
I just say, which I hate, I dread doing on one level. Because working in recruiting and staffing, I just always get that sense of like, oh, man, I always dread that kind of like, oh my God, you're like the perfect guy to talk to. My wife has been looking for work for 4.5 years.
Yeah. And you know what it's like? It's like when you own a pickup truck.
Yes, that is exactly what it's like. That is exactly what it's like. Working in staffing and going to cocktail parties is like owning a pickup truck. You never have it on Saturdays unless you're driving it to someone's house to bring a lazy boy to a location that you'll never go to.
Uh-huh.
That's exactly what it's like.
So it's like you want to hide the pickup truck.
Yeah, I do, but I don't. I mean, look, I used to be in a position where I had to tell people I was a paranormal investigator. So
you loved that, though, right? Because that was were like, "Oh, really? Tell me more."
No, because I thought I would love that, but then ultimately, what that meant was I just had to tell everybody that I was on a failed television show, that's the worst. If you have a television show and people ask you what you do, from like that. From, you know, that 100-yard view from beforehand where I was involved in it, I would think, oh, my God, that's got to be the greatest thing to be able to tell somebody. But there's nothing uncooler than having to tell someone, oh, yeah, I'm on a television show. Oh, yeah? What show? Like, it's only cool if they know you. If you have to tell them what show you're on, it's not cool at all.
Well,
so to say that, to at least have a job that people understood was an improvement, but it's a question.
Can we get back to this really quickly? Can we get back to this failed TV show concept? One of your favorite shows of all time, I know, is the British version of The Office.
Yes.
And am I correct in my recollection that it was only like 6 or 8 episodes, the whole show?
It was two six episode series, and then they had a Christmas special.
So it was 2 distinct seasons. I don't know why I thought it was just 1 6 episode season, and that was it.
No, one. There was 2 6 episode seasons and the Christmas special.
Okay, fine. Still relatively short, especially vis-a-vis the American version, which was like 8 years or something.
Right.
And I remember you years ago telling me that that's all that Ricky Gervais wanted. He wanted it to be a finite, short, small thing. That it was designed that way. It wasn't that the British public wasn't tuning in. Critics hated it, and it got canceled.
He could have kept going.
Yeah. In fact, it was critically acclaimed over there, right?
Very much so.
Okay. So I think that we need to flip the script and say, oh, yes, paranormal. What was the name of your show?
In lies the problem.
Okay, well, now you can make the show whatever you want, but what was it? Paranormal Cops.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
Oh, that's terrible. So you need to say Paranormal Cops.
Good
Lord. It was on for 6 episodes on A&E. We wanted it to be a very concise, in-depth look at the world of paranormal. We never wanted it to be this long vehicle that runs into the absurdity, like, you know, Paranormal State or whatever the plumber show was, you know, whatever. Who are those plumbers?
Right. Yeah.
They've been
on
for like 15 years.
Yeah. I'm trying to blank.
Yeah. We never want. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and then they go, oh, and then I moved on to other projects. Well, like
I
what?
Know, but I know that I'm lying. It would be cool to have done something that I loved and said, yeah, I did that. That would be the difference.
We accomplished all we set out to do in those 6 episodes. Next question.
Nah, I can't do that. It wouldn't be real. I mean, I guess I know, like, in an interview style, if I'm sitting down and someone sees on a resume or a LinkedIn, like, oh, you worked with A&E Television, tell me about it. That's, of course, how I would frame it. But when you're at a party and you're trying to connect with people, that wasn't the best way to do it, to go about and try to lie and, you know, try to position my experience with that show to have it be something that it wasn't. It was just painful of what it was.
Yeah,
not painful. I still don't regret it. I'm glad I went through it. I totally wanted the experience. But when you're in that mode of, you know, the what do you do for a living at a cocktail party?
Sure.
Which creates tremendous social/status anxiety for people. That, you know, that it was just a pain to introduce myself that way. And it's something that I don't even like. I would love to come up with a question outside of that to when I meet people, because I did it last night. I was hanging out with people and I was in that mode where I had to talk to somebody about something. I said, oh, so what do you do? And I hate that question, because the second it comes out of my mouth, I'm like, I know I'm not going to even care about what you do. I know traditionally they talk about this status anxiety that you and I have discussed.
Uh-huh.
People want to be able to impress someone else, have them see value in them by saying that they do this great thing. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. I couldn't care less what you think about what I do, because I'm trying to do something else that I think is so much cooler than anything that anybody else is doing. So when I talk to you about what you're doing, 99% of the time, trust that I am bored by it. It's like this opposite of status anxiety. I'm like status snob. Not that I think my status is great. Actually, I'm status...
agnostic.
Agnostic. That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I'm status asexual. I have no... I'm just like, ugh, I have nothing.
You should go with agnostic, I think.
Well, agnostic is not knowing. I know that I don't care. I'm status atheist.
I'm status apathetic.
I'm status apathetic.
Yeah.
And everyone listening to this is apoplectic, but trying to keep up with this.
That was very apropos of you to say.
Ooh. But I have such status just fatigue talking to people because I really don't care. As soon as you tell me that you're the VP of quality control at some company that makes tabletops, oh my God, I don't care what kind of car you have. My eyes glaze over. I don't care that you have offices in Italy and China. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me. And I just get so, bored with like what other people do. And it's so funny that other people look at it, that question, with such angst that they're trying, that they feel a need to impress. I just don't have that in me.
Well, and that was, you know, so my buddy Steve, who says that he's not embarrassed to be a digital advertising account executive. He was the one who put this on Facebook, this story, this article with this video. And the guy in the video tries to draw this Hindu-like life system philosophy toward that question, et cetera, et cetera. So I basically was on board with the content, and I was on board with Steve being like, I'm not embarrassed to say I'm in digital advertising, blah, blah, blah. But I do like that phrase, because when I hear it, it doesn't necessarily imply what do you do to make money. It says, it's just, what do you do? It's a fairly open-ended question. And I never really answer that question with my job or what I'm doing to make money.
And why not? I ask because I knew this one girl who, that was her policy, to never ask what anybody did. But I knew it was because she was she worked for her career. She was a bartender. She worked at a bar. That's all she did. That's probably all she'll ever do.
Yeah.
And I knew.
And she was embarrassed by
she
that.
Didn't want to get the reverse. Okay. Like, oh, I'm a paralegal. I'm a personal injury paralegal. What do you do? Oh, I work at Toons on Southport. She didn't want to say that.
Yeah.
I knew that. She would try to attach this other thing to it. So I'm curious why you don't want to say what you do in terms of...
Well, no, I don't want to... Exactly. I don't want to say... I don't want to ever identify with some job, some jobby job, or some way you're making money or something. I would rather answer that question with how I view myself. So I would say, well, what do I do? Well, I watch four kids. I'm a dad. Or I'll try to make them laugh or be like, well, I'm... See that lady over there, my wife? Yeah, I'm her butler or something. Like, I don't identify with any job, and I think it's foolhardy, especially in today's day and age, when jobs, like at least 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, if you had a job, you had a good chance of having that job for 25, 30 years, getting your gold watch and retiring at that job. Now we go through jobs every 6 months, and it ain't by choice. So why you would ever identify with something that is so fleeting? That's so dumb.
See, but I still would pick up a sensitivity there if I was talking to a guy and he said, see that woman over there? I'm her butler. I would sense that you were sensitive about that because it was so self-deprecating. Like, who would really, unless you were a butler, call yourself a butler?
Okay. Maybe. I mean, do I have a one phrase summation? What's my elevator pitch as a human? No, I don't have one for a career necessarily, but I don't know that I'd ever want it to be career oriented either. If I were the vice president of quality control at Tabletops USA, I can't imagine, even if I was pulling bank $750,000 a year, the finest prostitutes in the world helping me put on my lamb's wool prophylactics.
Ow, ow, ow!
Yeah, right.
Oh.
Right. I don't know that I would identify as that. And I know that that's how people think. And I almost take that question as it's almost akin to asking or talking about the weather. People don't know what to talk about. And so I never, as a life rule, I never really talk like that because I think it's such a topical, vapid, like, I don't know what to say. I'm a grown ass man who literally has nothing to say.
So what would be the question? Like, I genuinely would love to come up and just implant in my brain an alternative question to ask there, to be an introductory question, to start conversation, but it has to be that, like, boilerplate question, as in, what do you do for a living? Because it can't always be, well, say something about what's going on in the room or something of some topicality.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard. Sometimes you don't think that fast. You have to have that prefab question. What is that prefab question?
Yeah, and I have one, and it's worked in the past. I'll try it on you next and see if maybe I get a different response than what do you do?
Okay.
What do you do?
That will be interesting.
You should say you're an entrepreneur, you're a real estate investor, and you're an author.
No, I tell people what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And it's this.
Yeah. Jones and Mike.
Have you ever listened to a radio show and thought, I could do better than that? Who hasn't? But have you ever thought about actually doing your own show? Now that seems a little more daunting for most people. Hosting your own show helps spread the word about you and your expertise, your business, product or service, charity, or any organization at all. When you have your own show, people listen to you, get the credibility, authority, and visibility you deserve. Chicago Pod Show has the studios, equipment, people, and experience to help you launch your own show almost instantly. Host a show that's heard 24/7 on iTunes, YouTube, mobile apps, websites, or even on the radio. Chicago Pod Show does it all for you. All you have to do is be the star or the expert you already are. Find out how easy getting your own soapbox can be. Visit ChicagoPodShow.com or call 312-725-8017. ChicagoPodShow.com.
Jones and Mike Worldwide at JonesandMike.com. 312-957-7210. Hashtag Jones and Mike.
So, hi, I'm Mike Noonan. It's nice to meet you.
No, nice to meet you, too.
What's your name? I didn't catch your name.
My name is Brian.
Brian what?
Brian Jones.
Oh, Jones. Do you like the name Jones? Do you ever go by Jones?
Is this the question?
So, Jones, what's your story? That's what I do instead of saying, what do you
do? Never! I used to do that one. That was the worst one.
No, it's a good one.
No, it's not.
It kind of throws people off balance. They kind of go like, what's my story?
No,
It makes their brain go into a different place than, what do I do?
I understand where you're trying to go with that, but I used to try that question out all the time. And particularly with women, it does not work. It seems like this confident kind of funny thing to bring up. Like, so what's your story? Hey, bada bing. it comes off to other people. I'm telling you, it comes off to other people as a challenge. What do you mean? What's my story?
Well, I know. They always say something like that, and then I expound like, yeah. So, what are you all about? I want to say something open ended so that they can go in any direction. Well, I'm very passionate about the campaign of Dr. Ben Carson, or you know what? I have a child with this very rare genetic disorder, or they can go in any direction they want. I try to let them lead. And not say, what do you do for a living? I want to know what your position is, your title, how long you've been there, and if you expect a pension or not. Because you're right, I don't care.
Yeah, I understand. It's an attempt to circumvent the what do you do for a living question and all that status anxiety. But I've actually gone down both those routes, and I get real weird response. And I've tried it repeatedly. What are you about? What's your story? You know, and for whatever reason, people just react to me like, What, you want to see if I had an abortion? Like what? Like they just think like I'm trying to like go all in, or they really take it as I'm almost kind of alphaing them. Like, tell me what you're about. I don't know why it comes off that way, but I've not had success with it.
Well, and you have a very particular and peculiar way about you where you, I have witnessed you in situations that normal human beings can just kind of navigate through effortlessly with the ease of donning a lamb's wool prophylactic. You struggle in those situations for some reason. For example, tipping the blackjack dealer in Vegas became a running joke where you, for like days on end, never knew how to
tip. But weren't they being obnoxious?
It was every casino and every dealer. It wasn't like you'd be like, you'd hold up a chip and be like, for you. You'd say something so odd and they would be like, what, you want me to bet this?
Yeah, and then they would like yell at me.
Set
like
it on the table. Set it on the table!
Yeah. It was so weird.
Show your hands! Show your hands!
I know, yeah. Drop your pants and show me your butt crack!
Yeah.
Like, they went crazy.
People around you
that.
Were like talking on phones at the table, breaking like the most obvious of casino rules. And the dealer would totally, you know, just kind of smirk and smile and say something gentle. With you trying to give a $5 chip to them for a tip, I don't know why we tip when we win, as if the dealer had anything to do with it.
I know. It's so stupid.
But you doing that was so comical. It was hilarious.
No, I was horrible
at it. And beads of sweat would form on your forehead.
I was absolutely awful at it. So, okay.
So there is something about you that sometimes your frequency doesn't jive with human beings.
I think, okay, A, can you think of other examples of that? And B, and I guess this isn't really a B to tack on to A, but I do feel I am very non-threatening, so sometimes that can bring the friendly out of people, but sometimes if someone's having a bad day and they're looking for someone to pound on,
yeah, okay,
I can be that guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But can you think of another example where I've been that way, where I've just something that everybody else can just handle and I just suffer and bumble?
Yeah, and I'm not around you to that degree where but that was the first thing that came to mind.
Right, okay, no, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, no, I'm not defensive, you're defensive. So, you know, I think that you should try something along the lines of what's your story. Because you go to these wine tastings and you go to things that I don't go to. If I'm going to something, it's like with other parents in the neighborhood, I already have some commonality with them. Our kids go to school together, or they're on the same team, or blah, blah, blah.
Okay, here's an idea, and this just popped into my head. Is there a way where rather than I ask them the question, would it be weird, and since I'm the one that's weird and socially awkward, I'm asking you, would it be weird if I went up to someone and said, and I think this would actually, women would actually maybe dig this. I think a dude, you kind of, it's a 50-50 if he'd punch you. But would it be weird, tell me honestly, if I walked up to someone and said, hey, can I tell you my story? Can I tell you what I'm about?
Oh, man.
Rather than ask, or is that too weird? I don't know. I'm asking.
Yeah. Well, just like you go, oh, my God, I'm going to be bored to tears if you tell me about your job.
Yeah.
If somebody came up to you and was like, I'd like to tell you my story, I'd be like, no, actually, I got to go to the lobby and wait for my limo.
Right.
No, I don't have time for that.
I got to go play some miniature golf.
Yeah. No, no. I was, you know, and I'm going to go tip the blackjack dealer over there. I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
So, no, so maybe you just need a pithy elevator pitch, because you will be getting this for holiday cocktail season. This is the year Jones flips the script and has a different kind of response. And I think it should be, while I you know, what I do is a great question. I've been told that I am the millionaire maker and bestower of dreams. And if you say that with confidence, that will lead you into a totally different area.
I could never imagine me saying that. I don't even remember what you just said. I am the millionaire maker and bestower of dreams.
Well, I've been told that I'm the millionaire maker and bestower of dreams. You got to say it in the mirror, like in Reservoir Dogs, when he's learning the story that's going to Going to get him in as the undercover cop in the jewel heist.
Yeah, but then it just leaves me awkwardly staring into the mirror before I walk out to go to this cocktail party. Like, you are super cool.
Tim Meadows.
Roth, wasn't it?
Tim Roth. Yes.
You are super cool.
You're super cool. You could do this. And he takes off his wedding ring. He almost forgets.
Right.
He almost leaves it on. He almost ruins the whole thing. The great story about how he was smuggling marijuana, and he walks into a men's room in the airport full of cops and a drug dog.
See, maybe there's something to that, having that prefab story, because you remember all that from how many years ago?
Quentin Tarantino knows. He knows. That's his thing. You know, he knows how people talk and think and what they're thinking. And so you need to get Quentin Tarantino when it comes to this question.
Oh, yeah,
I don't need this. I don't need this question. I don't talk to women. Women do not talk to me. But you, on the other hand, you face this social anxiety thing.
Could I approach someone, particularly a woman, and say those things? I don't talk to women. Women don't talk to me. But I'm curious. What's your story? Would that
Dude,
work?
Yes. Yeah, you just need to soften it so it doesn't feel like a challenge. You're not punking them. They don't feel like there's a camera on them and you're like doing some bit on them. You're doing some shtick.
That's what it is. It comes off, however I present it, it comes off as I'm doing a bit, or they're going to be at the mercy of my shtickle. Like yeah. That's why I say I come off, I think, very alpha. Strangely for me, but when I've tried that in the past, because it almost seems like, hey, what's your story? Because I need some bits here I'm going to riff off of in front of all these people.
No.
That's the way it's taken.
Oh, no.
So my story now is I don't talk to women. They don't talk to me. But I'd love to know, what is your story?
Oh, yeah, dude. I like that. Boy, I want to go out and I want to see you do this.
I think I could deliver that line better than grabbing a woman's hand, as you suggest, grabbing a woman's hand and kissing it.
Well, that you definitely need to do sometime in the next 60 days.
What was the other thing that you did? You told me, and you were like, dude, you got to do this. And I was like, I don't think I can do it. It was just like 2 weeks ago. It was along those lines. It was something to say something to a woman's husband or something. Do you remember this?
What?
I was something along those lines. You just got to go up to him and say this line. I'm like, I don't think I can do that. But regardless, I'll move on.
I do have fun like experiences like that, and it sucks too, because now that I've been with my old lady for going on 25 years, like the thrill is gone. Like there's no.
Yeah.
In fact, she's coming over to your side, and she's constantly telling me, "You just say one thing too much. You always go that extra step that offends."
You do. I will
say
that.
And so the thing that titillates a lot of people now is, like, shit, don't titillate her. And the lack of titillation is leading to a lack of lambs. Yes. Yes. No lambs will need it in my house.
Well, in the end, I think that will mean for a longer existence of one Mike Newman.
I don't talk to women and women don't talk to me. What's your story?
I'm busting that out. I'm heading out to Chet's right now, out in Justice. I'm using that one.